You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from my apartment in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle, Charlie Davies, he of the North, Nantucket of the North, all bundled up, Charlie. And
Nantucket of the
North? I don't even know. What is it? Nantucket, Nantucket. I mean,
no, Nantucket's in Massachusetts.
Yeah, it's in Massachusetts. It's New England.
Nantucket of the North.
I think Charlie's wearing a blanket as a shirt.
I think he's trying to say, fancy North.
He's saying Charlie's on that vineyard vine. Oh, but
that's a good name for the Manchester North. For your Manchester USL team, the Manchester Fancy North. That's pretty good.
It's better than the New Goshshires or the Goshshires.
New Goshshires, baby.
Yeah, whatever that is. By the way, this is the MLS Cup review show. It's a special show in all of our hearts. We're not doing it in the same way that we would normally do it. I mean, before we jump into before we jump into the Columbus Crew's historic 3-0 victory, comprehensive, dominating victory in the 25th MLS Cup against the Seattle Sounders, missing, by the way, two starters, a DP, and maybe their most important piece. Well, second most important. Let's give Lucas Alarcon his shine in Darlington Nagbe. I do just want to reminisce for a hot second because we're doing this because of the time that we live in from our apartments per usual. But after MLS Cup was over Saturday night, I poured myself a nice large, probably forefinger of scotch. Mm-hmm. And I sat back and just sort of basked in the glow of the Crew's victory. And then I also listened to the 2018 MLS Cup review in which Bobby Warshaw actually died on a hotel room floor in Atlanta. Like, the entire show was punctuated by breathing like this. I mean, he was expiring in the moment. The only time he talked was to say, can we get breakfast? And we said, Bobby, you missed breakfast. And I just want to say to all of you, before we do this, this is one of my favorite shows of the year, and it hurts me that we cannot be in the same place to do it. It hurts me that we were not there with Crew fans, with Sounders fans, with fans from all over the U.S. and Canada. It hurts me that we weren't able to see our friends, that we weren't able to experience this MLS Cup in the way that it's meant to be experienced. It's just like it's just a reminder. It was a hole in my day, despite the fact that this was one of, I think, on the field, one of the best MLS Cups we've seen in a long, long time. So I miss you guys. I miss everybody that would have been there. I miss you, Crew fans. I was rooting for you, and I was so happy to see you get this victory. And I hope that we're there in 2021 to do it the way that it should be done. All right, let's get into it.
But wait. In the meantime, everybody keep wearing your masks. Everybody keep staying safe because it's going to be a long, dark winter. And we just got to do this for a few more months. Everybody stay safe. 2021 will be better than 2020. Now go ahead.
Julie Davies, King of the North.
Nantucket of the North. This is the perfect way to start the show. It's a complete just like train wreck of an analogy on my part. Lucas Alarcon, that guy's good. That guy's like, he's really good. Mm-hmm. He's like, in MLS Cup terms, maybe better than anybody has ever been before. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I saw something from MLS Communications. He's just the third player in MLS history to score two goals in a game. The last one, Aleko, in 2004, and he's the second player in MLS Cup history to be involved in three goals in a final. Who was the other one to do that?
GBS.
12 years ago.
GBS.
Guillermo. I mean, it was fitting. It was poetic. The whole thing was for the Crew. But to have the guy they went out and got to take them to the next level do it in a game in which they didn't have Nagbe and Santos was so impressive by Alarcon, and we'll get to him and we'll dive into him more. He said afterwards, basically, this is the player I knew I could be, and I had to find a place to be that player, and being on the fringe at Tigres, despite their dominance and how good they are, was not going to be it for him. He got to be the shining light, and the light shone through for the Crew. Let's just celebrate this, and let's start with Dan in Columbus. He says, I still can't believe it. The Columbus Crew are 2020 MLS Cup champions. Such a resilient team. Porter is a winner. Thank you guys for all your MLS coverage. I know it hasn't been an easy year. And that's part of this for the Crew, is that it hasn't been easy. And for none of the 26 teams in Major League Soccer, for none of you listening to this, for none of us, it has been easy. But for the crew in the playoffs, they faced up to what is basically the defining crisis of our times. They had guys coming down and were not medically cleared to play. They had guys not able to participate. They had Darlington Nagbe and Pedro Santos watching this game outdoors on a porch with a heater somewhere wearing their masks, not even able to be there to celebrate this with their teammates. Before we sort of dig through the nitty gritty and Aiden Morris and Brian Schmetzer's lineup decisions and why exactly Zellerion was able to get in the spots he was in. Dave, you're wearing the Crew SC shirt, so I just got to start with you. What did this mean? What were the emotions of this win? What did you feel afterwards? What do you think maybe Crew fans felt?
So there was a lot. I'd say the first for me watching was you saw a team go out for a championship game and play at their peak. And you don't always see that. Yeah. For them to accept the moment, to understand the moment. And it wasn't Zellerion. It was 11 players on the field. Everyone played the best game they've played. The team played that way. Caleb Porter's decisions, the way he started that game, how direct they were, how aggressive they were. So you walk away saying, wow, we got a champion. Like, we got a true champion, and they beat a great team in Seattle. And then the other layers that go on to it, which is what they've been through this year and what everyone's been through and the fact that we even got to a final, and then saving the Crew and what it meant to that fan base and what they had to do starting out 3 years ago and to fight for this team, which something we didn't think was possible, then to save it, then to have this team come back and put this type of performance on. All of that together, I think, was a lot of this is what can make MLS great. These supporters and what they've done. And we've talked about a lot this year. They created one of the two significant trophies in this league. There's no other league that does that in the world or in the US. And then you have a group, MLS Originals, who have been coming out to Mafre for years. And I've been to games there and the emotion that they have and the atmosphere they can create and all that to get this as that chapter to say, yeah, this team, I think a lot of people said they're not saved, they're champions now. And that's a whole nother level. And when you think about teams trying to rebrand to open up a new stadium and rebrand to try and change who they are, what can be better for 2021 than saying the MLS champions are going into a new building? Come watch us because we're the best team in the league. They were rewarded for the money they paid on Zellerion, which I hope means that they're going to continue to spend at that level as a club because it's worth it. They stuck by guys who have been around for a while, like Harrison Awful, like Jonathan Mensah, who stepped up and played in this game. And then they had an academy kid in Aiden Morris. And I go to GA Cup every year. And Columbus has put together some of the best groups in the academy for a small region. And Aiden Morris comes from Florida, and they were able to recruit him. But they're not trying to build the best academy team. They have an idea of how to produce players, even from an area that people would say, well, it's not Dallas, it's not New York, it's not LA. And they were still able to have a player like that at 19 starting an MLS Cup final and get the performance plus Dab God score. So everything was happening all at the same time. I was super juiced, super jacked up. I'm glad we didn't have anything to do after because I was basically walking around the apartment just getting pumped. And I thought it was awesome. I thought the way it happened was perfect on top of just the fact this is a team that was a deserving champion.
Felt like the fitting end to 2020 MLS season. And by the way, it's not over. We're going to talk about CONCACAF Champions League in just a second. Somehow, some way, it's not over. And Austin FC has an expansion draft on Tuesday. And, you know, it just doesn't stop. Preseason's not that far away. But it felt like the fitting end. This team that had faced insurmountable odds, seemingly so. I'm not sure any of us thought. I certainly didn't think that Save the Crew was going to actually save the Crew when it first started. I thought, hey, this is probably it. They're going to go to Austin. This chapter is going to be closed. This historic venue that has so many moments, both internationally and domestically, is going to be gone. And then to have the like final culminating moment for Mafre Stadium, Crew Stadium, whatever you want to call it. I mean, Dos Acero Zone, be a championship for the home team after they had lost there to the same coach who is now their coach 5 years prior. Like, I just kept thinking over the course of this week and certainly the morning of and during the game, like, this is poetic. This is poetic. This is poetic. And then to have them put in that performance, it felt like poetic justice, the way it was supposed to go down. You know, and look, Seattle has multiple titles in the last 5 years. It's not like they needed another one. To me, this felt like a fan base that they didn't need it, but they deserved it. And they got it. And I hope and I know that they will cherish it. And there is no asterisk on this. It is just a bizarre FUBAR year. We'll all know 2020, but we'll all know 2020 by one thing now, and that is Columbus Crew MLS champions. Doyle, what did you feel watching this as a, I'm going to throw an old joke in here, as an MLS original yourself?
I watched this as a Whalers fan. I know what it feels like to see your team leave. And I will forever be in awe of what Crew fans did. So I am, I don't have a rooting interest in these things. I'm a true neutral, and I like the aesthetics of the game more than anything else. But just from that emotional point of view, that's how I was watching that. So I was pretty happy for those fans who've been around and who pulled off what seemed like it would have been damn near impossible to imagine it happening in any other sport. They deserved it. They played a brilliant game. I thought Caleb Porter's game plan it was really, really good. They obviously had everybody on that team step up, from the most expensive signing they've ever made to the 19-year-old academy kid who has started all of two professional games in his entire career coming into this one. So it was like within 25 minutes, by the time they scored that first goal, I had taken the analyst's hat off at that point, and I was just leaning back and watching this because it was like, damn, it's like everything is happening. This is the storybook ending for this entire segment of Crew fandom, from you know, almost losing the team to this massive swell of grassroots, you know, fan movement to find an owner, to have that owner commit the amount of resources he did, to having... And having Tim Bezbachenko, who's so successful with Toronto, come home essentially to be the GM of the Crew, to have Caleb Porter come home in a way to be the head coach of the Crew, and then to put that performance together in MLS Cup. I said, after 25 minutes, I was like, I'm just going to watch this and enjoy it, because you don't get to see teams play like this and sort of put the final chapter of the story together like this often at all. So that's what was going through my head.
And you don't see that a lot in a final. We haven't really seen it in 2020. To no one's fault, it's been so hard to put together the exact performance you want, the best performance, not in MLS, in the world of soccer.
Yeah. I think 2020 has been like weirdly, it's delivered on that level. Like Portland in MLS is back. Portland and Orlando both in MLS is back, like getting rid of some demons. Orlando just by being a relevant team, and Portland by playing the way they did en route to... That's only their second title in the Valerian Chara era, which is incredible to me. And then Philadelphia almost choking away the supporter shield and then playing the way they did on the final day. So like we've been kind of lucky in the midst of everything that has been horrible about this year. We've been kind of lucky that we've had three separate trophy winning instances where the team that hoisted the trophy really gave us a show on the day of. And I think this will be the one, just because of how dominant the Crew were and how dominant Zeller Ion was, this will be the one that we all sort of look back and remember as like, oh yeah, they really did that.
I look at it from the standpoint, Caleb Porter being able to get his guys to believe in their ability, missing Nagby, missing Pedro Santos. The uncertainty is everyone clear? Are we going to have another, you know, case pop up before the game time? Everyone's on pins and needles. You don't know. And Caleb Porter talked about, and many coaches have talked about, waking up and getting a text, receiving an email early in the morning, 6 a.m., and you're just like, your fingers are crossed. You hope another player is not testing positive, or you know, having the option to go to the training facility and not having it locked down. So for the guys to show up on game day and absolutely stun the Seattle Sounders by high pressing and causing turnovers, being effective and efficient, not really dwelling on the ball, not worrying about possession, just saying, okay, we're just going to keep it in their half. Whether we have the ball or not, it doesn't matter. As long as we keep it in their half. Seattle Sounders didn't have one offside, not one. That shows you they are pinned back and they're just hoping to try and get some possession, trying to create some openings, but the Crew were all over them. And you look at Harrison Affle, Jonathan Mensah, who was massive with clearances, interceptions, just being that defender. You didn't need him for possession or creating plays out of the back. just defending, being a lockdown defender and winning his duels, which he did. And then Harrison Affle getting continue to get down the right flank, playing balls and cause problems, create width for Columbus. He's probably one of the players that I look at that probably doesn't get that much credit or enough credit for what he does for that team. He is a big part of why Columbus Crew are so successful, because he's always pushing the left backs or the left wingers for Seattle back. So Jordan Morris had to defend a lot more now. And so therefore, when you're making Jordan Morris defend, you're taking away a lot of what he does to opposing teams, which is one, the fear factor of his pace and his athleticism. But two, now you're causing him, after, you know, a lot of these players have played a long season, you're making him work hard on both sides of the ball, which now is taking away from how often he can be on the front foot, how often he can make runs in behind, and where he is when he does receive the ball, when Seattle gets possession. So Caleb Porter, I can't tell you how much credit I give him and respect I give him for, you know, guiding the ship, and then the players taking care of it, listening to his direction, his tactics, and implementing.
I think that is something that we haven't really pounded on yet, but like the emotional and mental side of losing those two players. I mean, Pedro Santos had started every game but one this year for the Crew. Every single game but once. When Darlington Nagbe was out, they dropped off. That's when they dropped off. Of course, Zellerion is the other part of that, and that sort of back and forth between the two of them. But like, there was reason to doubt the Crew. I felt like this is Seattle's to win, and if they don't win it, it's going to be a major blight on them. And then the result is that Seattle are the first team, sorry, Purdue and Anders, to lose MLS Cup by three or more goals. The first team didn't even show up. All the dynasty talk, I mean, throw it out the window. Their dynasty was based on this game. These games, MLS Cup finals, it was.
It is.
There wasn't another sort of like pillar in the resume. Not it was like, we get the job done in these games, and they just didn't even show up. Stephen Fry said afterwards, you know, maybe this hurts a little bit less because we didn't. Had it been close, had we been almost there, maybe it would have sort of like tore at us. But you can't look at this game if you're the Seattle Sounders and think, oh man, what could have been? You can think that before the whistle blew. After that, you clearly understand what happened. Let's celebrate Lucas Zellerion, because I was a little bit, he deserved it, but I was like, was he really the newcomer of the year because he missed some time? Yes. God, yes, he was. I don't think I can, like, whatever little inkling of thought I had about that was just dumb. I mean, this is God mode that he went on in this game. He was unstoppable. When he had opportunities to punish, he punished. His ability to finish in difficult positions and make that finish look exceedingly easy, incredible. The way that he made like Jaimar look like he was on skates in this match without very much movement, like with pauses and head tilts and just shoulder dips. I mean, you couldn't get close to him. And then once you couldn't get close to him, you couldn't get close to the ball if you're Stephen Fry, because it's nestled in the back of the net. This is one of the all-time MLS Cup performances. We already said it. I mean, just based on the numbers alone, but on the impact, on the occasion, on everything, Lucas Zellerion, as you said, Dave, he just made those millions of dollars melt away.
Yeah, it's this like, is yeah. why you get a guy like that. And I would say, coming into this, in abstract, if you had told me, let's say the Crew don't have one of their star players available, you know, who can they handle missing? I thought Nagbe would be a bigger loss than Zellerion, because they don't have anyone else who can do the things Nagbe does. And not only did Zellerion do the things he does so well, I thought he added in by working hard, coming back and helping defend, getting into tackles. And so when you look at Seattle not showing up in this game, you know, there's a million reasons, but I think for the Crew, he set the tone and he led in this game. And that's not something he's done all year. And that's not who he is, because in Tigres, he was the fifth most important attacker and he could come in and have good moments, but it wasn't on his shoulders. And that's why you sold him on coming here and being your 10 and building a team around him. And that's what he was saying in the post game about, I didn't know, I thought I could be this player, but I had to come here to do it. And so you saw that performance where the skill and talent's always been there. I mean, what he did to, I can't even remember who, for the Revs, to get the cross in to create the goal. That's what Lucas Zellerion can do. We saw the free kick in the MLS's back tournament. We saw the play throughout. But then the additional work that he put in this game, the energy he put in to this game to make Derek Etienne's job easier, and Luis Diaz, who I thought had his best game in months, easier because he's drawing attention from them. Zardes didn't have to score in this game, which I don't know that we knew would be the case for the Crew if they were going to win MLS Cup. All those things were available because of the way he played in this game. And so that's what it is. on top of the talent and skill, was the mentality of playing like a champion in that big moment and leading this team from the front.
Yeah. So one of the things that you said, Weeby, was how he put Yamar Gonzalez, Gomez Andrade on skates, and he did the same to Shane O'Neill as well. And that goes back to the game plan, just understanding where the space is going to be against the Sounders. They were weirdly gappy. Even when they were playing well, they were weirdly gappy between the central defense and central midfield. And that's where Zelarayan lives. He's not a Ladero type of number 10. He's not a modern number 10 who will drop all the way back to the defenders to pick up the ball, who will orchestrate the entire game, and who will sort of make magic 80 yards from goal. That is not his game. His game is in those half spaces, in the channels a little bit, and finding... He doesn't occupy defenders. He finds the gaps where the defenders aren't, and he trusts his teammates to get him the ball. It's a lot easier to do that, or it was during the regular season, when Darlington Nagbe's out there. Because what the Crew do when they're full is they run the tempo of the game. And Nagbe is irreplaceable in that regard because you can't rush him. You can't take him off the ball. So everything is very deliberate and very ponderous, and like they pull you apart with the ball. And because Nagbe and Artur, and then both fullbacks who are like basically central midfielders when it comes to their ability to pass and be their comfort on the ball and find lanes, because of those guys, Zelarayan just stays in those spots. And that happened to line up where Seattle's weak spot was. The difference in this one, obviously, no Nagbe. How is the Crew going to do this? And it comes down to Caleb Porter's decision to change the tempo of the game. Columbus was no longer about controlling like the pace that things were played at. They were about just hurrying the Sounders, winning the ball, and then playing direct to that spot as quickly as possible. Because Zelarayan was always there, halfway between the central midfielders and center backs, is always forcing the center backs into a decision whether or not to step off their line. And of course, that's the toughest thing against the Crew, because Jossie's always making textbook fundamental runs that are designed to occupy both center backs, creates, forces the opposing back line to play a little narrower than they want to play. And then all of that adds up, and you look at where the first two goals are scored. Just off the back shoulder of the center back on the first one, because Roldan has pushed all the way up and nobody has rotated back. And the second one is at the end coming around outside again, because the fullback is pinned. So all of this movement together and the decision to say, look, this was our identity during the season with Nagbe. We can do a similar thing even without him, just at a different tempo. It was really well done from Caleb Porter. It was really well done from Aiden Morris and Artur. And it was just really well done from the Crew. And Zelarayan was absolutely the man on the spot to capitalize on all of it.
Now, it's not that we didn't know Caleb Porter could do this. I personally didn't expect him to do it, because he is so dogmatic about that style and about the way that he wants the game to be played.
So wait, so obviously with Portland, he moved away
in
from
words,
what he did.
At least.
But
in words,
he didn't do it week to week, and he didn't do it for the big game. Right, he did it over the course of a season because something wasn't working, something else was. I didn't think Caleb Porter was the type of coach who would look at this and say, I'm going to change things up because of what's happened. I thought he was going to try and plug pieces in and play the same way, or drop off and say, this is what Seattle does poorly. I'm just going to make the game hard for them. I didn't see this coming. And that's why, to Doyle's point, what did you say, 25 minutes into this game? I remember awful hitting that early cross and being like, what is happening right now?
Yeah.
Whether they scored or not, it was like, what is going on? And I think the whole game, I said all 11 players played phenomenally, but this is Caleb Porter's shining moment. Like, this is his crown jewel, not just to win, but the way they did in this final, and to prove that he could do that, and his coaching evolution is incredible. And that was one of, I think, the biggest takeaways from this game.
I think the one-year sabbatical plays a big role in this, right? You have the success with Portland. It's kind of starting to come down. You step away for a year, you're able to reflect, and you look at kind of the perception of Caleb Porter, where he's always coming off as the guy who knows, has all the answers, you know, is very cocky, has that kind of, I don't like that guy because of his mannerisms and the way he carries himself, almost like too pretentious. I think the year allowed him to kind of reflect and work on some of those issues. And we see the top managers in the world, when they take time away, they figure out, okay, where were my flaws? How do people view me? How do I get the most out of my players? What were some of the downfalls? Even though he walked away, you still, I wasn't getting the most out of my team, and people are starting to paint me in the negative light. So Jose Mourinho has done that at Tottenham, and we all thought, I think everyone thought he was done. I think he came into this Columbus Crew situation with a more of an understanding and more of a willingness to listen, to have the back and forth, and it's not my way or the highway. I heard Jason Christ also talk about, you know, earlier in his career in New York City FC, it was, you either listen to me and do what I tell you or you're out, and there's no middle ground. As a coach, you have to have a middle ground. There has to be discussions. There has to be the dialogue between the player and the coach to go in the right direction so both of you can kind of continue to move forward. And I think when you look at just the players when they celebrate, what players go into a press conference to go get their coach and say, come celebrate? That doesn't happen unless he literally has created these relationships, these personal relationships with these players. And he talked about after the MLS's back tournament, this was our team evolving. We didn't win the MLS back tournament, but that's not the goal. The goal is MLS Cup. This is going to help us when we get to, when we on our quest to get MLS Cup. And I look at the system situation. I say, man, Caleb Porter has really grown as a player, a person, as a person and a coach with his players. And that's where we've seen the development from Caleb Porter and the humble approach instead of the, I know all the answers. I'm the top coach and I have this and this. It's more, this is what my team is. I go out and I try and give them the game plan and they execute. So well done.
You saw, I think, the relationships and the celebrations after that final whistle. And you certainly saw the emotion from Jonathan Mensah. We talked to Jonathan on the show and he sort of like led us just a little bit behind the curtain. I think there's so much more back there that he's just not willing to share, but you could feel that coming out. And he said afterwards as well, like he and Darlington are so close. And so to not have Nagby there to celebrate with was really painful, and not to mention the family side of things for him. But I think Caleb Porter, and maybe Doyle, you said you disagree, and you're probably right. Maybe it's because I had developed that sort of caricature of Caleb in my head as sort of immovable, as the cocky guy who says it's this way and that's the only way. And instead of trying to adapt in that moment, I'm going to prove to you that I was right all along. And it was the system. The system is what's going to win. So applause to him for doing this, and applause to him for putting Aiden Morris on the field and trusting him.
Yeah.
Because we said it, two starts. He lost the guy that is his security blanket in MLS ahead of maybe his biggest game as a manager ever in Darlington Nagby. And he found a way to get it done. And not only did he do that, but he found a way to get it done with a 19-year-old who I believe, and I need to go back and do the full research, but I think this is right, is only the second American teenager outside of Landon Donovan to start MLS Cup.
He's only the second teenager ever to start MLS Cup. He's the third youngest player to even play in MLS Cup after Freddie Adu and DeMarcus Beasley. And he pocketed Nico Ladero. He pocketed Nico Ladero, who we all agree is one of the best number 10s that's ever played in this league. It was Aiden Morris who won the ball and started the sequence on each of the first two Columbus goals. The kid deserves all the credit in the world. He more than rose to the occasion. You could argue he was Columbus' second best player on the day. But it's also, look, Caleb Porter deserves a lot of credit for trusting him. The Crew deserve a lot of credit for the investments they've made in their academy. And performances like that from 19-year-olds, they don't happen in a vacuum. Right. Or maybe you got lucky with a Landon, right? Maybe you sign a once in a generation talent and you're like, well, we got to throw this kid out here. He's awesome. But like, this feels to me like a top down and ground up sort of situation where the culture of the team is, if you're good enough, you are old enough. And having that trust in the locker room goes a long way. And it's why I think we all agree that come 2021, nobody will be shocked if we're sitting here again talking about how the Columbus Crew won either a Shield or MLS Cup or US Open Cup or even CCL. Because if you have that kind of talent and that kind of culture and that kind of flexibility, because again, they were a control the tempo team. At their best, they're in tight when they were beating Philadelphia, when they were playing so well in, you know, early part of the season, and MLS is back, when they had Nagby, they were saying we were going to get on the ball and we were going to use that ball not only to pull you apart and create chances, but to make sure you never are able to transition against us. You just can't counterattack against the Crew. They lost that. And then they went out and played probably their best game of the season in a completely different style. That's incredible to me. It is just a monumental achievement. Yeah, on the day, but also overall for how this team is built and what they're capable of.
So I just wanted to bring up one of the top scenarios that I think of when we talk about this was Greg Berhalter doing it with the Crew against the Red Bulls, which was that surprising. I also want to bring him up just because I think 7 or 8 of the starters on the field in this game came into this club under Greg Berhalter, including sort of Aiden Morris in the academy. And I just think he deserves credit in this moment to say, at a time when the club was not focused on being, you know, strong, anything. He kept the team together on the field, him and Pat Onset, and they continued to bring in talent and continued to create a strong situation soccer-wise, which allowed Tim Bezbachenko and Caleb Porter to come in and sort of add the cherry on top and win this title. So I think in a moment like this, he deserves credit for what he did in Columbus and the roster he helped build and that academy, because me and Doyle both talked about it, but they've put together strong academies. And it comes to having the right fundamental soccer-wise that he brought from the top down, which allowed their coaches to step in and train those players at a high level because there was a high expectation of the soccer they would play. It wasn't, we're just going to try and win at the academy level. And so that, I think, is a lot of his credit. And I think Aiden Morris, and we saw it from his own son, Sebastian Berhalter, this year, I think they're the tip of the iceberg. I don't think the Crew are going to be Dallas. I don't think they're going to be Philly or New York. But they should be a team that has homegrown players in their group consistently because they have brought in some really good talent.
And let me just add one thing real quick. Credit to Bezbachenko and Porter as well for when they come in, not having so much pride that they were like, we have to tear this all down and build an entirely new thing. It takes a lot of self-confidence to say, well, the guy before us, he left a really good framework. Let's just add our own little tweaks, add our own, sort of bells and whistles to this to make it our team. And not like, I'm sure that they are both entirely happy, you know, to say, hey, Greg Berhalter did a little bit here too in building this. We just were able to push it over the top and turn it into champions. It takes a lot of confidence and a lot of belief to do that.
We had a good debate in the pre-show meeting about Aiden Morris, and Charlie, I know you got some thoughts
on that.
I do want to save that because we'll talk a little bit in a second, and maybe we'll just do it in CCL, talking about what can come for the Crew. We have, get out your watches, folks. All the people that text us and email us and tweet at us. It has been, Producer Anders, give me a number here. How many minutes are we into the show? 32 minutes into the show. We have not dug into the Seattle Sounders at all. We have strictly celebrated the Columbus Crew.
So in fairness, I would argue we're having the same performance that the Sounders did in MLS Cup. Ooh.
We
waited about 35 minutes to start playing.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
Should I grab my Sounders pin that Chris
Arhut emailed? It's perfect. We're down 2-1. We're down 2-1. We just saw Dab God do the like chili celebration, which was class, by the way. Well done from him. And we're like, we're regrouping. We're like, crap, what do we do now? And we're probably never going to figure it out. Let's just talk about the lineup decisions. And Charlie, I'll let you kick us off here. I truly believed that Brian Schmetzer would go back to his veterans, his international players, arguably the best right back or most complete right back in the league, in Kelvin Leerdam. I thought he would go to Gustav Svensson. He did not do it. He did say afterwards that Nicolò Daro had a calf injury. To me, that's all the more reason to play Gustav Svensson. What happened to the Sounders in this game? How much did the lineup decisions play a role in that? And how much does it just go on the players for not really showing up?
Well, it goes a lot on the players. When you look at the players, the responsibility to have a certain impact, energy level, the intensity, it wasn't there. That was lacking. But also from looking at the coach and how he lines up the team, you need Gustav Svensson on the field. He just scored the game winner or the goal against Minnesota to get them into the MLS Cup. He's fit. You play him. You play him. You start him. He's played in World Cups. He's an anchor. He's going to be in the midfield. You're talking about Zeller Rayan, who's going to be buzzing around. You need someone who knows spatial recognition, who knows where to be, when to be, and how to deal with a player like Lucas Zeller Rayan, who's going to be able to help organize and someone that you don't have to worry about at all. Also, I think more importantly, is Jovan Jones playing on the right side. And I've said this, I can't tell you how many times I've said this. Jovan Jones is a left-footed player. He's playing on the right side. This isn't a creative coming inside, combined, shifty, slow the game down. This is a player who has a lot of pace, likes to go north and south. He's not an east-west kind of guy. So if you're playing Jovan Jones as an inverted right winger, you're not really helping your team. And on top of that, the right back, if you played a right back who gets down and often, then you're like, okay, I'm going to have an inverted winger who's going to come inside and then create some more space for, let's say, a Kelvin Leerdam to come up and play these balls into the box, create opportunities, even score for himself. Jovan Jones had a very poor game. And I'll repeat, he had a poor game, not really, really well, which someone else had stated.
hasn't stuck in your mind.
Right. He had a poor game the match before. You go to Christian Roldan, which you used this in the game against Minnesota, where you said, okay, let me make some tactical adjustments, and that's what Schmetzer did. Roldan goes to the right wing position, and he brings Svensson in, and it changed the game for you massively. And Will Bruun came in and also gave you a spark. But those were the two major changes. I would have started this game, no doubt, with Leerdam and Svensson, because you're going in off the high. They have fresh legs because they didn't play 90 minutes. They didn't play the full game against Minnesota. So they're going to come in with this energy. Plus, they're buzzing. Their experience could be both of their last chances to get an MLS Cup. So why wouldn't you play them in this situation? Especially, I think, where Svensson is. You know, alleged to go be going back to Sweden after this year. I'm playing him. So I think he started the team off on the back foot, on the wrong foot. And then you look at what Jovan Jones did in the match. You look at Christian Alex Roldan, who is just not good attacking right back. And defensively, yeah, he's hung here and there. But as far as the understanding of where to be, when to be, he's still growing. And he's
literally in his first year as a right back. It's insane that he started over Leerdam in this game.
It is. For me, it's mind-boggling that you started Alex Roldan over a healthy Leerdam. It blows my mind. And then Jovan Jones, again, you're not giving your team the best situation, best opportunity to win. If you put Roldan higher up the field, who someone's buzzing around breaking up plays, now you can push guys higher up the field because you have a ball-winning midfielder who's now playing on the right side who loves to come in and tuck inside. So you're overloading the midfield. And then that brings in more players to kind of consolidate the midfield. You're giving the right lane wide open for Leerdam. And you wouldn't want anyone else besides Leerdam to have that option to provide the width, to be alone to play balls in the box to Rui Diaz, who was starved of service. So I think Schmetzer made a massive mistake with his choices in the lineup.
So I think also one of the things is, I think Brian Schmetzer wanted to ride the hot hand, what had been winning. And yet it had been disproven against Minnesota. They were bad in the first half against Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, these players came off the bench and won the game, as Charlie said, against Minnesota. Like, I understood going into that game that he has his ideas about momentum in a group and the flow of things, fine. But that had been broken a week ago. So to choose to push yourself back to that in this game is the part that made no sense. Because from a soccer point of view, it didn't make sense. And then from an emotional point of view or a confidence point of view, it also didn't make sense to make that start. And the reasons are on top of, you know, Roldan, then can he pin back Milton Valenzuela or help defensively against him and make his life harder? And so then you have more help there. Does it make the life easier for the defensive midfielders? Because now they don't have to shade to Alex Roldan's side as much. And I think the biggest one, as Charlie said, is in possession. We've seen for three games, Alex Roldan just not an effective player in possession, doesn't keep it, doesn't hit accurate passes, doesn't play crosses at the right time, gets a lot of them blocked.
Doesn't get forward.
Beardam has been a top five right back every single day since he's been in MLS. Not the number one one, but top five, which is consistent. And he can do all the things you need him to do, to Charlie's point. So a lot of that I thought was weird. And when you look at the lack of energy from Seattle and maybe the lack of game plan, I don't know if the lineup decision is a symptom of that or the reason, but it all kind of goes in the same direction of what was Seattle's idea of how they were going to win this game, not what Columbus could do to lose it, not how to last and then bring the subs on and change the flow. How was Seattle going to go into Columbus mm-hmm. and win MLS Cup? And I don't think they had that idea. And that you saw it play out in the starting lineup, or it was because of the starting lineup. That I'm not 100% sure.
I look at this post game and you hear that Nico has an issue with his calf. And that's what baffles me, because he is your most important player. He has been your most important player for 5 years. He is the reason why you've been in these championship games. Now, there's a lot of other reasons, but he is, in my mind, on the field, the predominant one. He has been the consistent factor all year long. Protect him. Protect him more. That's why you put Svensson in there, so that João Paulo isn't the only sort of like, and I know Roldan was in there, but now his job is much bigger. It's just like, just protect him and also take away the best attribute that they have on the other side and have someone who's just like, I'm going to sit in here where Zalaran likes to work, and I'm going to direct traffic, and I'm going to make sure everybody's held accountable. And the other, just play your best players in the biggest game.
So
like, that's the part I don't get. Just play your best players. It's not like you're not going to lose Alex Roldan.
So
if you come in and have Leerdam start, like Jovan Jones has come off the bench a ton this year. You're not going to lose those guys. He's going to be better off the bench. Play your best players.
Mm-hmm. I get what you're saying, and I agree with you. Especially in hindsight, it is obvious that Schmetzer got the lineup wrong. But this is actually what we crushed him for after 2017. Because in 2017, he changed the lineup for the final after that team had played really well throughout the playoffs, with the idea being like, I'm just going to get my best players on the field. And Toronto ripped them to shreds. So it's almost like a damned if you do and damned if you don't. Again, obviously, the personnel decisions were poor. I think the Leerdam one in particular, even though, again, I think Alex Roldan has been pretty decent. I think, you know, especially given that he is still learning the position. At the same time, when Leerdam came on, he was poor. When Svensson came on, he was poor. I don't think it actually would have mattered in either way, because the Sounders just didn't look prepared for this game. And you saw it on the first goal. This was not a team on the first goal where Roldan actually, I thought, does a nice job of harrying Derek Etienne Jr. all the way back to the midfield stripe. And when you have, there are people in my mentions saying like, oh, why did he follow him that far? It's like, because the alternative is to let a guy who's good off the dribble turn around, face you down, and dribble you 1v1 in the attacking third. Of course, if you have him turned backwards, you keep pushing him backwards. But if you watch that play, literally no one else on the Sounders is pushing up. Literally no one else is saying this is a chance to get the crew out of the attacking half where they've been living for the first 20 minutes of the game. And then as Roldan has made that, you know, defensive play 50 yards from goal, Jones and João Paulo are just standing there. Like, and then eventually they both point to Zell Arayan. They're like, hey, look at this run. Somebody should be marking this guy, which is insane to me, because it's like, if your fullback pushes up that high, one of the two of you needs to know to make that defensive rotation. It's a very basic defensive rotation. It is like the heart of why teams play a 4-2-3-1, because you always have that extra man back who can do that for your team. The fact that Seattle didn't even make that rotation suggests that they just weren't prepared for this game. They weren't prepared for dealing with what Lucas Zelarayan has done at a high level all year, and they deserve to lose. And this they deserve to lose 3-0, which is the largest defeat in MLS Cup history, and I think this was the most dominant performance I've ever seen in an MLS Cup, other than maybe 2017.
But when Roldan has a player facing his own goal and running back, you don't chase him all the way to the their half. It gets to a point where you're forcing him back, and then the next guy, you get into his zone, the next guy comes over and deals with him. And so therefore, you're creating an opportunity to win the ball back, but you don't just continue to follow him all the way in. And I think no one came over to help Rodon as well. So then you're like, well, no one else is tuned in. Why aren't other players tuned in? Because he felt that I have to follow him because no one else is coming over as he continues to move back towards his goal facing. And he also had an opportunity to play the ball inside. And next thing you know, they switched the ball. So I think for Seattle, it wasn't the occasion where guys just didn't show up. And the energy wasn't there. The commitment wasn't there. And again, that's where you need your coach to make sure everyone is motivated heading into the match to perform at their best. They didn't do that. And Columbus Crew, on the other hand, Caleb Porter, had his guys motivated to the fullest. There wasn't an ounce of fear. They didn't play with fear. They played with absolute confidence in their ability. And this is our game plan. And when we execute it, we will win. And that's what happened.
Exactly. And look, the back end of that first goal as well. Stephen Fry, who has been the rock, the unquestionable sort of like eraser in these games, big games for the Sounders in the past. That's one that you would expect him to save, probably.
Really?
Pretty close to the silhouette, man. Like
it would have been a great save.
It's off a first-time volley coming across the goal. I don't know.
Either way. Okay, how about this?
In 2016, he made that save.
Yes, he's made the save in past those cups. Either way, it's an unmarked number 10 who did his job at the back post. Congratulations to Columbus Crew. We're 45 minutes in here. We do want to talk about Austin and the expansion draft and their roster build, which kind of feels wrong in this moment, but it is right.
Who's going to be better next year, Columbus or Seattle? I just want to get everybody on the record right now.
Regular
season. Who's going to have a better regular season?
Wait, can I just throw my receipts out real quick? Yeah. I think I picked Columbus second in the East to start the year. I picked them to win MLS is back, and I picked them for Supporter Shield. Like with 2 months left. So I got all of those wrong, but I've been high on Columbus for a while. And I'm pretty sure in our preseason, I had Aiden Morris in my,
we did hype Aiden Morris. We did hype him.
Yeah.
We all did. Get out of here. Don't try to pretend that there's only one person going through the turnstiles right now.
Hey, Andre, bring up that Jordan Angeli interview where I said he's the best Morris.
Yeah, I'd take the we out. Goss was high on the Crew all year. I remember him. You were all in. So
I got you.
Yeah, but where was Dave? Did we do MLS Cup picks? Did we have like brackets we had to submit? I feel like we did.
Yeah, I think last Thursday we did MLS Cup picks. There was three of us, and only one of us picked
Columbus. No. Rewind a little bit farther back. That was when you had an easy choice, when it was only two teams. Rewind back from the beginning.
As easy as your choice, Weeby, where you chose Seattle?
So nobody's going to answer my question then.
I'll take the Crew. They're younger.
Yeah, I'll take the Crew as well.
Charlie?
I'm going to go with the Crew as well.
It's also regular season. When does Seattle play well? Regular season.
Hey-o. All right. As I said, it feels sort of wrong, but it is right. It's Austin FC. The expansion draft's coming up on Tuesday. I mean, we crown a champion, and within minutes, we're already switching gears. Caleb Porter said it afterwards. He was basically like, yeah, we're champions. I'm excited, but like, there's a ton of work to do, and it all starts back up almost immediately.
The worst thing in MLS, by the way, just real quick, is they tell the players on the championship winning team that they're not coming back next year before the parade, obviously not a parade this year, happens because of that turnaround.
When they go back to the hotel.
Yeah.
Literally.
So you win the title, you get told you're being released, and then you come celebrate with the team you're no longer a part of.
Literally.
That timeline sucks.
It's hard.
We lost MLS Cup final to LA. Everyone's down. Even if we had won, right? Party, whatever. You get back to the hotel. The plan was always to meet the coach and the general manager, the sporting director, in the room and say whether your option has been taken or declined. Okay.
And this is before you can even go out. You can't even go. Like, you can't walk in there with a 12 pack. It's like you line up at the door, huh?
I've been to two parades where you talk to players who are like, "Yeah, by the way, I'm not coming back next year." At the parade. And you all like interview them about how happy they are to be in that city and win. And they're like, yeah, I'm so pumped. I'm also, my option got declined.
Yeah. Also, I know you both were keen on people saying, picking the Sounders for next year because Caleb Porter's team the following season after playoffs, they usually.
Well, that is the big test for Caleb.
It
is. Right?
And he said it afterwards too. He knows it.
Yeah. So that'll be really interesting to see what we get out of the Crew in 2021. I hope they play like they did this year because they were one of the most fun teams in the league to watch.
Mm-hmm. All right. We haven't had the Aiden Morris argument. Maybe we'll get it later. TBD on how fast we can go through all this. Tuesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, Austin FC, the expansion draft. Those protected lists or unprotected lists, whatever you want to call it, those are out. It's going to be live streamed on every channel that Major League Soccer has, whether that be YouTube or Twitter or Facebook or the site or the app. So you can watch it at 6 p.m. Eastern. And remember, this is not an Austin FC thing. This is an entire league thing. The dominoes that start falling in this are massive, whether it be trades, whether it be guys getting taken themselves and then moved, whether it be signings to their trade window that comes afterwards. And there was a trade window that already opened up with some big moves. Austin FC get 5 picks. The 10 teams that had players selected by Inter Miami and Nashville SC during the 2019 version of this expansion draft, they're exempt in 2020. They don't have to protect players. They don't have to mess around with the whole thing. They know their rosters are going to stay intact. These are the teams that got a little something to worry about, or at least should be hitting the phones trying to affect the way the day goes. NYCFC, Cincinnati, LAFC, Columbus Crew, Seattle Sounders, Minnesota United, Portland Timbers, New England, Atlanta, and Sporting Kansas City are the teams that had players selected. So I had that written wrong. Those teams are okay. Not to introduce fear into your hearts. Those teams are okay. Everybody else, be very, very afraid.
Your defensive rotation in a big moment.
I just was pointing. I was just pointing. I was like, Dave, pick me up here, man. Like, where are you? Where are you? Where are you? Let me go through the whole thing. So the other 16 teams, you can protect 12 players and everybody else is out there.
You can only have one taken from each.
Correct. Combo. Once it's taken, you're out. And GA players and homegrowns are automatically protected. So that is very, very big. Before we get to our guys that could be taken that we think are good targets, here are some trades that went down for Austin. I believe they made 5 deals in that little trade window between MLS Cup and right now. They got Nick Lima from the San Jose Earthquakes, $500K in GAM. Quick thoughts. What do you think about this trade? Doyle, what's your thought on Nick Lima? He never seemed to be an Almeida guy, to be honest.
No, he did not. I think there was some tension there. It wouldn't surprise me if maybe Lima had asked to go. This is a good haul for San Jose, assuming that they're confident that Tommy Thompson or Paul Marie maybe can play that role.
They just re-signed Tommy, so.
Yeah, for Austin, I think it's a no-brainer. You get a high-level starter in this league. It's, you know, it's $500,000 of GAM, which is not nothing, but for expansion teams, that's not a ton. And we saw what Nashville did last year in terms of, like, get proven guys to play at the back. Don't be anything fancy. Have guys who are going to compete every single game and win their duels. And that's exactly what Nick Lima is. And he could push forward a little bit too. So I like this. I like the Cascante trade as well. I don't think he's a great MLS center back, but he's been around for a couple of years. He's a Costa Rican international. He's had some good moments. He's in the prime of his career. Ben Sweat's not great at left back, but for $100,000, like that's an easy choice. Like he's probably not going to lose you. Too many games. He's not going to win you anything. So they have guys in the prime of their career now along that back line. They still need to find their own Walker Zimmerman, but this was a good day from Austin, I thought.
I think the way you feel about that trade,
that's how I feel about Uli Segura. He's not going to win you any games, but he's not going to lose you them, and $150K is nothing. For a little context, Nick Lima's younger, but I think Daniel Lovitz was 15 GAM, 15 TAM, and an international spot, which is about 150 right now.
So well, if you think
But if you think Lovitz was about 250 in value, he was 3 or 4 years older, and Lima now comes out to 500, but he's an MLS starter. He could possibly play on the left if you need him to, a little flexibility.
Yeah.
So it's probably a good move in the end for them.
Joey Gallagher is the other one from Atlanta. This is 175 GAM to start. Maybe could get up to 225. Had some nice moments for a bad Atlanta team this year. One of the few bright spots. So yeah, they said, Claudio Reyna said, look, we want to have leaders. We want to have MLX experience. We understand that trying to integrate a squad and players from overseas coming in and not knowing the league, that you have to have guys that understand it and can lead the way and can sort of be like guardrails to say, okay, this is the way it works. This is the, you know, these are who these players are. You've never seen them in your life. This is who this team is. This is how the situation with travel or logistics or whatever else works. We can help you settle. That's what they're looking for. We'll see what that means in the draft as well. Charlie, any names from the list of the unprotecteds that stand out to you? They're like, oh yeah, it could work. I mean, our first impressions, to be honest, and this is really the way it's been the last couple years,
Yeah.
When you look at these lists, it's be like, ooh, you know, it's you're going to be scuffling a little bit. So you got to find an asset, or you got to find a player that you think can fit in as a depth piece, most likely. Mm-hmm. But look, I mean, Joe Willis came from a trade when Derek Valentin that Nashville made last year. So they got a starting goalkeeper out of it. I mean, there are ways to create value, to create potentially starters.
Yeah, I think one player that comes to mind is Juan Agudelo. And Juan Agudelo is a player who the league, many teams in the league have always held in high regard. And they always look back to, you know, when he made his national team debut, that the potential was through the roof. The limit of his ability, everyone thought, in the bicycle kick in the 2015 playoffs against DC United. You've always seen some of these plays that he's been able to do throughout his career, and you're like, wow, this player can be something special, but it's never been consistent. So I think when you look at a player who still has some value to his name as far as a bargaining chip, it may be worth taking a flyer.
Do you think so, Charlie? I mean, this last year,
people keep coming to get him. Charlie's not wrong.
I mean, that's true, but the salary.
People in this league keep coming to get him.
He always finds a spot. Always.
Would you take one if you were Austin FC?
Well, you look at it. I'm not saying you take him to play him or build anything. But to flip them, yeah. I'm a flipper. I'm in the flipping business.
Gotcha. Yeah, you're trying to flip. Can I throw in a couple names out there? I would take Kamal Miller from Orlando
100%.
Pretty quickly. If you're talking about a guy who can play multiple positions, and look, he's not going to be an up and down left back, but if you're just trying to be solid, he can be there. And you need MLS experienced center backs. Why couldn't a Kamal Miller be like similar to a Dave Romney for Nashville? Why couldn't he? I don't see why he couldn't. He has a little bit less experience, but he played in big games this year. And in the same breath, Teshua Kandelia would be one that I would look at as well. Not to be a starter, but to be a multi-position guy who will put in the effort, be good in the locker room, and understands the league, and can get the odd goal too. I think both those guys would be guys that I would look at as well. And maybe Ryan Mira. Goalkeeper.
Ryan Mira was very good this year, I thought. And I'm a little surprised to see him not on the protected list. Did we mention Ilsenio?
We did not mention Ilsenio. You would have.
Yeah, I would. I wouldn't mind having Ilsenio in the squad. I'll tell you that. Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know his contract situation, so I don't know that you would take him here and not try and sign him outside of this. But Joe Corona is a guy who you're coming to a city that's has a massive Mexican American population. He had a tough year this year, but in fairness, playing for the LA Galaxy in midfield is an undesirable position. He's not a guy that I would be surprised to see on this roster, but I think he's a free agent. I don't think you have to get him through the expansion draft.
That's the rough thing about looking at these unprotected lists. And I just want the folks out there, when you go through, to think in this way. Like, you got to think about contract status, you got to think about contract number, and you have to think about what other mechanisms Austin FC or other teams, because that's part of this. Other teams are going to use Austin FC as a tool to make the moves that they want to make, because Austin can go choose from this list. Like, would you take a free agent in the expansion draft? No, probably not, because that's a wasted use of that pick. And we've seen teams in the past waste their picks, talking to UFC Cincinnati. So you want to get this done in the right way, and you have to be smart about the way that you do it. Because if you can get them somewhere else, whether it be like, hey, here's a fourth round draft pick, hey, here's 50K in GAM, you don't use that this opportunity to do that. Some other names we had on here: Derek Cornelius, that goes back to MLS center backs. Miguel Nazarit, you threw out there, Doyle. He's a Colombian youth international. Didn't really get run for Nashville, and maybe he's one you take a flyer on. Jared Stroud, Michael Azira. I know he's gone on this a lot of different times, but like, you know, maybe you're just saying, hey, we're looking for like a low salary, 15 game, can spot start at defensive midfield. Knows the Colin role, Warner knows role. The league. Yeah, I mean, there you go. Gotta have those players. Yeah.
So, absolutely. There's a rumor out there that Matt Beisler might be headed to Austin. He obviously announced that.
Did we start that rumor?
No. We did not. Someone else did. It is not substantiated in any way, but it would make a decent amount of sense as just a guy who knows MLS. You'd assume they're going to try and get a fairly experienced international center.
Felipe could be a good addition too. Coming off, you know, he's older. He's coming off an ACL. Looks to be like he's gotten his fitness back, but on a low budget. Someone who's going to be in the mix, rotation. You're not saying he's a starter every week for an expansion team. Wouldn't be the worst signing.
I think Beisler could be interesting depending on where he is physically because everything I'd always heard about Kansas City is that he really was everything that anybody who was in that locker room says is that the culture they had as players in that locker room was as strong as any they've ever been in. And Beasley maybe is not the most like demonstrative on the field all the time, but everything that I had heard is that he is sort of like the guy that's setting that culture in a lot of ways. And so if you're, you know, I know Josh Wolf will have known him from back in the early Wizards days when Beasley was just coming into the league. There's a relationship there. Maybe that's a way to help set your locker room and set expectations and go forward. We don't know where Matt is physically. We don't know what he would be on the field. But that's something interesting to think about.
And your assumption is him and Cascante are splitting a spot. Neither of them are true MLS starters. There's been rumors around Paulo Aguilar. There's probably a big-time center back coming in at some point.
TBD. We'll see. And by the way, 6 p.m. Eastern, again, interviews with Claudio Reyna, all the picks live, MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Doyle, Kalen, myself. We will be able to guide you through everything that's happening in that moment. Any other trades from this half-day window that stood out to you? Marco Farfán to LAFC, but we knew that one was coming. We did see Colorado pick up the number 6 overall pick in the Super Draft from Chicago for $125.
I think that Kalen Montgomery is an MLS roster player. I was surprised that Dallas didn't give him any shots. $50,000 from Minnesota. It's basically nothing for Minnesota. I think they've done this a couple times now where they've just kind of valued guys they think should be on an MLS roster. And sometimes they'll hit for you. And sometimes they won't, and then you'll move on. But I thought that was a smart move from Minnesota.
Give me a little bit of scouting report here, because like I personally just don't know Kalen Montgomery at all.
Yeah, big, I think he was the big third left pick.
Yeah, he was top pick a couple years ago. Big left-footed center back, Canadian. Has he made his debut yet?
He never played in MLS, only North Texas.
No, I mean for Canada.
Oh, no.
But he's a guy who could, I think, end up being a Canadian national team center back. He's pretty athletic. I'm with David. I'm surprised that he never got a look with Dallas. Maybe they'd like Breck Evans better for that role. But, I mean, he has the profile of a dude who could end up being a starter in this league. He really does. He just needs to get to the right spot and get the right sort of development and the right chance and then take it.
And this is also one of the other things that came out, I think, from this one or whatever always is, this is a salary cap league. So if you see assets, you take them to the point about expansion draft just to move them later, potentially.
Yeah.
Right. So like, that's what I think with LAFC and Marco Farfán. I think Farfán could be an MLS starter. I don't know that left back's the position they needed to fill, but you see Portland, you know, they're bringing in a big time left back from South America. You know, he's available. So just go get him. And if you want to move him later because you're trying to get to the top of an allocation list or you're trying to pick up some extra GAM or TAM from someone, then you still have it. But there's no reason to not try and build assets on your roster.
I think there's also a bigger picture aspect here of how MLS teams are sort of internally starting to reevaluate guys who are on the fringes of rosters. Nashville paying $2.25 million for Handwala Bawana, or LAFC paying $300,000 for Marco Farfán. These aren't starters. They haven't been starters, but they recognize that there's talent there, and it makes more sense to pay $2.25 million or $300,000 internally than to go out and spend $400,000 on the number one allocation spot in order to bring back Andy Nahar. Like, MLS teams have paid a premium. No, they have paid a premium for overseas talent in recent years, and the hit rate has frankly not been great. Whereas if you have an infrastructure in your club to develop good players, that works just as well for Americans as it does for imports. And teams are sort of starting to recognize that. And it's creating a little bit of an internal transfer market where one didn't necessarily used to exist.
We've crowed about that for a long time. Wanted to see it. Can we do this? Should we do this? It feels weird. I haven't been able to deal with it emotionally. I haven't grappled with the return of the best competition in the world, CONCACAF Champions League. It is back. It is bizarre. It makes no sense. Every game is being played at Explorer Stadium in Orlando. It's like single elimination in one. It's away goals in the other because we're picking it up in the middle of a pandemic. It is everything that we could have dreamed of and nothing that I'm personally prepared for in this moment. Before we get to the four teams that remain, and that is Montreal Impact, down 2-1 to Olympia. You may not remember, but they lost at home 2-1 to Olympia. New York City FC, right before the pandemic jumped off, Tigres beat them here in New York, 1-0. Actually, in New Jersey.
Yes,
I forgot about that. And also, Atlanta United got smacked up by Club America in Azteca. So they're down 3-0 going into this second leg. And then LAFC and Cruz Azul never did play. And now LAFC is catching Cruz Azul on like the most epic collapse in the history of collapses from a team that knows epic collapse like no other. They have a chance. Before we get to that, though, can I just express my chagrin, my anger, my frustration, my confusion that Atlanta United would be rewarded with a CCL spot for 2021 based on literally nothing that they've done this year, on a technicality from last year? I thought MLS is back, that the replacement there was, that's the US Open Cup replacement, essentially.
It should be.
Atlanta United's going to be in, and everybody's going to hate it. And I know they might have Gabriel Heinze. I know they'll have Joseph Martinez back, and so they might have a chance, and it might be good. But it's BS, man. They did not earn this. The Sounders should be there. Sporting Kansas City should be there.
Sorry. I understand your point, but it's a U.S. soccer competition. And to say the winner of an MLS is back tournament where other clubs from the U.S. were not eligible,
so
gets it, is a little tough.
Okay, fine. Give it to Minnesota United. You already had your crack at it, Atlanta. You already had you got in. You played it.
Maybe you don't give it to a runner-up because the other team did that this year.
That's not even the same team that won it.
Yeah, but that's never been. That's always been the case.
Well, come on. I just don't like it. I just don't like it.
I don't. I'm with you. I don't like it. They didn't earn it. They don't deserve it. But
Dave is right in a way, and I hate to say that.
Yeah. it is kind of like. You have to have that opening. So.
And it's, you know what? Sometimes hate watching things is better than like enjoying it.
Wow. And Atlanta's going to be the first team, MLS team to win CCL.
I mean, you saw the reaction from them. They were
and Weeby's going to be like, I'm an Atlanta guy.
Yeah, exactly. I'll just come full circle on it. That's the most fitting way for this to happen.
They better pray and hope that Heinze works out in that first 6 months. I'll tell you that. Because if he doesn't, you know, Arthur Blank doesn't play any games. There will be some major changes.
And to be fair, it didn't seem like Atlanta played that many games
about how to deal with CCL in his first preseason.
Oh, God. Well, to be fair, Gabriel knows that that's preseason.
Yeah, of course.
Those games are preseason. These are friendlies. Yeah, like, does it really matter? Should I be judged on them? No.
Yeah.
Okay, so 2021, we do know the Timbers are in. We know Crew are in. We know Union are in. We know Atlanta are in. We're still waiting to see who will be in from Toronto and the Forge in the Canadian Championship. Who has a chance this year, right now? Games on the 15th, Tuesday. Games on the 16th, Wednesday. Tuesday's Olympia Montreal and Tigres NYCFC. Those are on FS2 at 8 and 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Do either of those teams have a chance? And who does, if either do?
So I didn't hear what names you said, but I will say this. LAFC have the best chance going forward, and then NYCFC would be second.
Yeah,
so they're down 1-0. Can NYCFC do it against Tigres? The difference
between those two chances is monumental. Like, Tigres isn't the team they were 2 or 3 years ago, but they're still really, really good. And NYCFC are playing them 1-0 down. Like, that's you
with
need
an away goal in Tigres' pocket.
You need a really really epic performance.
And I would argue for Tigres not winning in the Mexico playoffs, they've never won CCL. This might be a moment for them to kind of come together and be like, let's try and win this. There's really no reason not to.
People were saying about Cruz Azul in the Liga, like, oh, 2020 is so messed up. This is finally going to be, this is the only possible way for Cruz Azul to actually win. And then no.
Yeah. The question is, if you played Cruz Azul versus Atlanta United 2 in a CCL game right now, would either team win? And the buzzer says no.
I think we all agree LAFC have the best chance. And Cruz Azul is, they're a wounded animal right now. It would not surprise me if LAFC get past them, but it's going to be difficult. Cruz Azul is a super talented team, and then they would end up playing, is it Club America in the semis?
It would be America, because we're not giving Atlanta United a chance in hell.
No. Yeah. So they would have to beat Cruz Azul, then Club America, then presumably Tigres would be the favorites on the other side. That would be a hell of a run.
Well,
they already beat León this year.
That's true. Leon were the best team in Mexico.
Yeah. They beat them 9 months ago.
To prepare myself for the inevitable, for free space, for disappointment, as as this competition is. What if an MLS team did win it this year? Like, would it be fitting?
I'm not emotionally ready to answer this question.
Yeah, same. I don't even want to go there.
Yep.
I think there's a moment where you could say, I guarantee you it'll ignite all the arguments of, well, MLS teams have always been playing in their off seasons against Mexican teams in season, and that's why we've never won it before. That will be like one of the first takeaways.
But to be fair to everybody that's still in this competition, this is basically their off season.
Exactly. I know they've been training. No, but same with Mexican teams.
Yeah.
It's the closest it's been to equal. I think Montreal showing up with like 14 teenagers and three guys who got cut by the team and a guy who's on just for the tour. Yeah,
didn't they already let Bojan go? So like Bojan's not even going to be like.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to be there. I think Anthony Jackson-Hamel is coming, even though he's not been brought back.
They right.
brought a goalkeeper on loan from the CPL just for. Oh, sorry, from Indy 11 just for this tournament. So, yeah.
And this is bizarre.
It's borderline the most normal bizarre. Thing that's happened in 2020 is CCL being bizarre.
What is this? Yeah, actually, what is this? I guess we'll see. We will see. So Tuesday, December 15th, Olympia Montreal Impact, 8 p.m. Eastern, FS2, then Tigres NYCFC right after that on FS2, and then Atlanta America and LFC Cruz Azul on Wednesday night. All of those on FS2 as well. So settle in. And also, I assume on TUDNA or Unimas as well in Spanish. And generally, that's the way I like to watch these matches as well. So tune in. We'll talk about it on Thursday, or at least you guys will. And we are efforting to have either Josh Wolf or Claudia Reyna on the show to talk through what happens for Austin FC. And then that is, for the year 2020, going to be it for us. We are going to put out our award show, the CONCACAF Awards, on the 21st, I believe. But that was taped a while ago.
Continental Awards?
What did I say?
CONCACAF. If CONCACAF sponsoring us now, I'm here for it.
Let's go. CONCACAF should sponsor. They should allow us to be the official award show for the CONCACAF Champions League.
If that was
League.
The case, our uniform would be white t-shirts wearing pennies over it because our team's also wearing white. That's one of my favorite moments in CONCACAF all the time.
Good, beautiful stuff. The Continental Awards.
The CONCACAF Champions League final is December 22nd. Just saying. So like, if the craziest stuff happens, I don't know.
And if the craziest stuff happens, I guess we'll have to find a way to do a show. The plan is that we are not going to do a show after the 21st until the new year. So, I mean, I guess, I don't know. We'll have to, like, I don't know. We'll, like, drink a bunch of brown liquor and jump on Twitter or something like that.
It'll be an eggnog special for that one.
Yes. This is, and also...
Nantucket.
This is my last show. Yeah, this is my last show for 2020 as well. So Dave will guide you through everything on Thursday. And then when we return, it will be, from New York, New York, from my house in Kansas City, Missouri. Everything will change. So prepare for
that. Are you allowed to still say New York, New York?
Oh, no.
Yeah, kind of.
I didn't.
How much allocation did Sporting KC have to send to get you down there?
Yeah.
What's the number on Weeby?
I was assuming that Charlie would just say it's a free transfer because I'm making, you know, I'm going where I really want to be. I'll just take that out of your pocket, Charlie, before you can throw it out there. Yeah. But now I'm like thrown into disarray. It can't be O from Kansas City, Missouri. Like that's...
It's got to be, man.
If you start saying that, I'm leaving the show.
No, we're truth tellers on this show. We can't start with a lie. You're not from New York, New York anymore.
Maybe Doyle will do the intro, and then Weeby will come in.
No, hey, Goss, you've hammered the intro before. I know you can do it.
I will not let that go.
He even hit
New York.
You know what? If I was going to let anybody come back and Bobby do that, it would be Bobby. It would only be Bobby. We'll just get Bobby to record it. We'll go get an old show and have him do it, and then I'll just jump in on the back end of that. We actually probably should consider doing that. If you have an idea for that, or if you have mail for Thursday or for the rest of the off season,
yeah, send some mail in for Kalen Carr.
Extra time at MLSsoccer.com.
And shouts to Chris Aarhus for sending the best mail in the world.
Yes. Cookies. Dave, I'm forgetting the jingle. I'm forgetting the phone number. Can you remember it?
401-206-0MLS.
That's it.
And if it's not, leave that person a message too.
Yes.
Everyone needs some on the holidays.
Exactly. Inundate them with your MLS takes. We will see you on Thursday, or at least these guys will. And then we hope you have a happy holidays season, however you celebrate it, with whoever you celebrate it. And as Doyle said, please be safe. And hopefully next year we are in stadiums because we are now safe. That's it for us. Thanks for listening. Congratulations to the Columbus Crew for winning the 25th MLS Cup. You got a little something to say, Charlie? You just want to?
Yes, I want to say it's been a pleasure to work with you guys this year. It's been awesome. I love this show. I wake up, I'm excited because I'm like, oh, we get to talk about what's happening, where this league is going, what needs to change, and it's been awesome. So thank you.
Charlie's excited for 2021. A lot of teenagers walking into coaches' offices and demanding playing time. This is the new MLS.
Yeah, we didn't get to that Aiden Morris conversation, did we?
We'll do it on Thursday.
Yeah, you can do it on Thursday when Charlie can't respond back. All right, that's it for us. Enjoy your week, everybody. Again, Tuesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, the expansion draft. Austin FC making 5 choices and then probably a flurry of trades afterwards. So tune in. Coverage at MLSsoccer.com. See you later.